It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your hosts, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 252-247-7282, and let's talk legal.
Okay, let's do that. We're all set here. Welcome to the studio of Harvell & Collins, taking over for the next half hour. Cecil Harvell, Wes Collins, good to see you.
Morning.
Missed you last week. We were talking
about... going to court somewhere. I don't know where I was going.
Onslow County.
Onslow County. Yeah,
that's
right.
That's your job. That's where you need it to be. And we were talking about, in your absence, we were talking about wills and why people should have wills. And Cecil, I think we're going to continue that
conversation. Well, we were talking about, and you're absolutely correct, but the question is, you know, Mr. Collins, do I need a will? You know, Mr. Harvell, do I need a will? Or why do I need a will? And we're talking about a last will and testament. And of course, you know, Wes and I just get that question all the time. And one of the reasons you might want to make a will is because you want to have to avoid having to hire Mr. Collins.
Right.
Because if you don't have a will, the potential for litigation greatly increases. And as we did mention last week, and then I am going to get into some devil and details here in a moment, but we mentioned that right out of the gate, the question is, since you don't have a will, who is going to be your executor? After all, you didn't reduce that to writing. You didn't make your will and selection known as to who you want your executor to be. And so the court has to appoint an executor. And there are some guidelines for the court, and the court will look at those guidelines, but the discretion is vested in the court. And already, if there are two or more children, you know, if there are, you know, if it's a second marriage with children from a prior marriage, I mean, right out of the gate, we can have some litigation issues. And we really do want to avoid that, don't we, Mike?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Because what everyone has in common with the settlement of their estate is to avoid delay and avoid excessive cost. And right out of the gate, we're talking about delay and we're talking about excessive cost. You know, if you have appointed your executor, Mike, this person, he or she, or co-executors, they are your executor.
Mm-hmm.
Absent a showing by some other heir, some other person involved in the estate that they're unfit, okay, or that they have somehow breached a duty in some way, the court is going to have to honor the terms of the appointment of the executor in the will.
And the other point we talked about last week was the fact that as, you know, as humans and as Americans, we'd like to take control of our own destiny. And by not having a will, you kind of have relegated that responsibility to the courts. So you lose that control, that aspect of control, which runs counter to us as humans.
Yeah. No question about it.
Yeah. Also, you know, depending on the circumstances in the family, it makes a big difference. I mean, as we've talked about before on the program, if you're in a situation where it's your, you know, lifetime marriage and, you know, one or two kids of the lifetime marriage, then having a will is important for lots of reasons. But usually folks want to leave everything they have to their surviving spouse and then down to the kids. So, in the event you die without a will, then, the North Carolina Intestate Succession Act takes over and that law determines how your estate then passes. And what a lot of people think is that, you know, if I'm married and I pass, then everything goes to my wife or everything goes to my husband, everything goes to my spouse. Well, that's not the case. If there's a child, then, you know, the first $30,000 of personal property would go to the surviving spouse and then the real property is going to be split 50-50. So, that could be okay. That could not be okay. If it's a second marriage, you know, obviously, then that kind of murkies the water a little bit, you know. But that probably is not going to be, if you go in and sit down with an attorney and sit down and talk about what I really want, that's probably not what you really want. So basically, you know, putting a will in place allows you to, as it relates to your assets and how they want to pass, set up a plan so it's specific as to what you want, as opposed to just letting the state decide how it's going to go.
And that's what it is. I mean, it's, you said it, Wes, right there. It's a plan. You're mapping out a plan. And when you sit down with Harvell and Collins, and that's exactly what you're doing. You're mapping out, you're putting out that roadmap for that individual, understanding the family structure, the family tree.
Correct.
And going from there.
Correct.
You guys see it all the time, and people may feel a little angst about, ooh, how do I first start this? But you guys have been doing this for three decades now, so it's usually the same song when they come in. What they don't have, you guys put the plan in place.
So I think Wes nailed it in terms of right out of the gate. One of the most common surprises is that things do not pass entirely, 100%. To the surviving spouse, mm-hmm. when there are children, and the Succession Act makes a little bit of a distinction as to when there's just one child versus two or more children. It's one half when there's just one child, but if there are two or more children, then of course it's a 1/3, 2/3 distribution. Another shocker, I think, for folks, and here comes a real shocker. Okay. This one doesn't come up that often, but actually I have just had it. I've just recently had it come up that if there is a spouse, no children, but a spouse. Now there are a lot of folks in our world that have these wonderful marriages that just didn't have children. Are you one of those?
You're talking to me now. Yeah.
Okay.
So you can use me in the example here.
Very nice. All right. Well, you know, in those situations, your parent is still an inheritant under North Carolina, under the North Carolina Intestate Succession Act.
And both our mothers are still living.
So the spouse inherits mm-hmm. one half of your estate, of your real estate, and $100,000. And the other half, the balance, is to your parents. Or parent.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is another very shocking thing for folks to realize. Now, if you're young, you know, in your 20s and you're married and just haven't had children yet, then maybe that's not as shocking. But for someone like yourself who's,
right.
you know, in middle age, you know, that's a little bit shocking, isn't it, Mike?
Surprised.
Yeah,
there.
You would
yeah.
think everything would go to your wife.
Yeah.
But under North Carolina law, without a will, everything does not go to your wife since you have a parent.
Really?
Yes, interesting.
And we both have a parent, so would it be split evenly in that case?
No, it would. We would look at the family tree of the decedent.
Okay, all right.
So, for instance, let's say that you have the parent, and you were to die,
yeah.
then the Intestate Succession Act is going to apply to your estate. On the other hand, if your wife were to die and she has no parent.
Mm-hmm.
You see, we would be looking at her family tree and whether or not she does or does not have the parent. Okay.
Does it move to, in that case, we're talking about me, but people like myself who are married without children, if she doesn't have a parent, she dies, does it go to her siblings?
No.
Okay.
Just the parent
just
at
the
this
parent.
Point. Okay.
Interesting. That is a bombshell.
Now, if there is no spouse, and there are no children, and there are no parents
mm-hmm.
still living, mother okay. or father. We've got to look for both.
Right.
No parent whatsoever. No mother, no father, no parent. Then now we do look to siblings under those circumstances.
Okay.
No spouse, no children, no children of deceased children, no grandchildren, great-grandchildren, no lineal line, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
And no parent, mother or father. Now, of course, we go to siblings.
Mm.
That's when, and siblings are sometimes referred to as collateral heirs.
Collateral damage. I hear that. Okay. Interesting. I did not know that.
Right. So like I said last week, when these files come into our office, Wes and I sit down with the client. And within, you know, the next day or so, with the client's help, you know, there's no way to do these files other than to diagram out the family tree
mm-hmm.
and to be very detailed in the family tree and to ask the kind of piercing questions that need to be asked. You know, it just is what we do. For instance, the question, how many children do you have? so many times people will say, well, I have two children. Mm. And if you just go with that information as a good lawyer, you could be making, you know, a fatal mistake. The follow-up question to the how many children do you have? Well, I have two children, Mr. Harvell. The next question needs to be, well, do you have any children who died?
Mm-hmm.
And then the answer is, oh, yeah, I do. My daughter died. And then the next question is, does she have children? Yep, she has, you know, a 21-year-old. She has a daughter.
Because without asking that question, you're not
without
learning,
asking that.
You're not learning
yeah.
about the other.
And you learn a lot about age. We love human nature. People don't like to talk about, and I don't blame them, for heaven's sakes, their deceased children.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes you really have to press a client on that. You know, how many children do you have? I have two children. Well, do you have any children who died? Well, yes, I do. I have a daughter that died. And then they will tell you the circumstances of that. But if you don't ask that question, if you're not armed with the experience to ask those kinds of questions, then you could potentially make a mistake.
And imagine some people say, I have three children. Well, one's not really ours, but we raised him since he was 3 years old. So he wasn't biologically ours, but he was in our household. Does that sometimes come up in conversation?
Oh, yes, all the time.
Yeah,
in other words, the stepchild.
The stepchild,
right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you said this last week, Cecil, and I thought about it over the past week. As far as what we're talking about today, for some people, again, it may cause a little heartburn, a little angst about how to get started. But this is something that's mm-hmm. very simple to remedy, to get in place, versus, like, if you were to go to your oncologist and start talking about a plan for cancer treatment. This is something that you can fix right away. A person that mm-hmm. doesn't have a will. To get them a will, mm-hmm. it's not that difficult.
Sure, it's a matter of calling someone who deals with this, mm-hmm. sitting down and talking to them and putting it in place and
yeah.
spending a couple $100 on it. I mean, it's not very expensive, you know, in the grand scheme of stuff in 2020.
And conversely, if you don't have this and life happens and you're without a will, boom, we just talked about what the scenario is. It gets tossed into
yeah.
the court and takes a lot more time to get remedied and
right.
ironed out if it does.
You know, a couple other areas that I think are that people don't think about that are incredibly important would be that, you know, a good will is going to have what I call a holdback provision for minors, because, you know, in the event that you have a situation where a minor, someone under 18, receives something under your will, this could be because one of your primary beneficiaries died. And it then passes to their children. This could be like grandchildren, great-grandchildren. Could even be children, depending on, you know, the circumstances.
Right.
Then, you know, you don't want to leave under your will or without a will those assets to someone who's a minor, because then those assets then are going to pass to the clerk of court, you know, to be held,
mm-hmm.
you know, until they turn 18. You want to have a trust. It's a holdback trust. And then you decide, okay, in the event that one of my grandchildren receives, or two or three or however many of my grandchildren receive something under my will, at what age do I want them to receive it outright? I know I want it to be there for college, or for, you know, down payment for their first house, or for vehicle. You know, I want it to be there for them. Therefore, I'm going to name a trustee. I'm going to name someone in the family who's going to oversee that. But then when do they get it outright? Normally the answer is not going to be 18,
mm-hmm.
and that would be the situation if it's with the clerk of court, it has to be released at 18. But if you have it in a trust, a lot of people, you know, want to do it at age, say, 25, something like that. Sometimes 21, but 25 gets them out of school. They have learned a little bit, maybe a little bit of maturity, that
yeah.
type thing.
Yeah.
So that's a big deal. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have that in place, man, I've seen lots of situations over the years where there's a problem with regard to that. A lot of times when we're dealing with, you know, life insurance that's not set up right, you know, or some kind of non-probate account that ends up passing to minors, and then having to set up guardianships, you know, through the clerk of court, as opposed to those assets just simply being held in a trust. And life is a whole lot easier because that was all set up correctly.
It's all about planning and all about mapping it out ahead of time before life happens. We're going to take a short break here. If you want more information from Harvell and Collins, go online to harvellandcollins.com or call the office at 252-726-9050. We're going to take a brief timeout. We'll be right back with more Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. Welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. We're discussing the ins and outs of wills and planning.
We are. Michael, we've also spoken last week and other weeks about, you know, every 5 to 7 years, pull out your last will and testament, take it to your lawyer, and just sit down for, you know, 15 minutes to 30 minutes and just review the terms of that document. Yesterday, interestingly, I'll share this with you. I had some very wonderful people in from the Cape Carteret area, and they had their wills done about 10 years ago, I think. But the bottom line is that they have 3 children, and at the time that the wills were done, their kids were, you know, in their late teens, early 20, and those children had no children. Mm-hmm. So the will leaves everything a third, but if one of the three dies, which of course would be a tragedy, but if that were to happen, then their third goes to the surviving other two. Well, now, of course, all of these children have had children, and one of them had 3, and the other one had 2, mm-hmm. and the other one, I think, had 2 as well. Lots of little grandchildren around there now, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Very loving family.
And, of course, they were just astonished to think that if one of their 3, something were to happen, that third would not go to the children of that child, to their grandchildren. And they were so astonished by it that they asked me, you know, since we've now met with you, you know, do your notes become legally operative? You know, mm-hmm. we get this question a lot, Mike. In other words, people think just because I've now told you and you as my lawyer have guided me in what I need to do, is it now effective? And of course, unfortunately, we have to tell the client, I'm sorry, we do have to get your document signed mm-hmm. before it's legally effective. It's not just based on the notes that the attorney makes during the first conference. Now, by the way, Mike, these people did not come in to have their will reviewed. They came in for some more extensive type of planning in their file with regard to protecting their assets from a long-term care expense.
Okay.
But in the course of us talking about a trust for them and how we might protect their assets from a long-term care nursing home, something of that nature, rehabilitation center, the issue of their will came up, of course, mm-hmm. as it should, and they brought them and I reviewed them. And that was the first thing that I noticed, was that the terminology in the will was share and share alike between their 3 and did not include the grandchildren. They, of course, again, and this is what we find, this is why we want you listeners to review your will mm-hmm. with your lawyer every 5 to 7 years, because there might be some things in it that you just, you know, don't recall. Circumstances change. It's usually, and I've said this before, it's usually in the contingency provisions. The contingent executor, what if a child dies? That's a contingent, again, mm-hmm. just like yesterday. It's the contingencies that tend to kind of, you know, circumstances in our life change where those contingencies change.
Can you write that into the will, the contingency, if one of the siblings dies, the spread is not a third?
Absolutely.
Absolutely
we do.
Okay.
And we do it with great particularity. I mean, absolutely. Because, you know, if you've got 1 or 2, Wes has 2 children, I have 2 children. If God forbid something were to happen and they have children, then we need to address that in our last will and testament.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So the more specific you are, the tighter the will is, the better it is for the person mm-hmm. holding that will.
Well, that's a pretty straightforward provision, though. I mean, you know, if your child dies and they have children,
yeah.
then by the terms of your will, that percentage would go to the children. If for some reason they do not have children, Michael, they don't have children, then that percentage would go over to the other living children.
Very good.
But the moment they have a child, one of your children, then the grandchildren are vested and would inherit their parents' share.
Very good. Mm-hmm. I want to take a break here. So when we come back, we have a little bit of time. I know Wes wants to add into this this comment we're talking about. Wills, Ross, let's take us to a break here. I'm talking with Harvell and Collins. And if you want to learn more, go to harvellandcollins.com or call the office, 252-726-9050. We'll be right back after this brief timeout. Welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. We're talking about wills, and I think Cecil's last comment there, Wes, you were ready to say something before we went to the break.
Yeah, I mean, I can just kind of filter through all the cases I've dealt with over the years that come up when, you know, things are mentioned and we start talking about it. I listen to Cecil, you know, making comments about wills, and one issue that comes up that I think is important here in the last 3-4 minutes is you know, I would caution folks against pulling wills off the internet and using those or doing the doc in a box type thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm dealing with currently a case right now. I can't go into too much detail because it's not resolved, but the situation was that there was a couple, two gentlemen in a committed relationship, same sex relationship. That's just, you know, their relationship. They were together for almost 20 years. They pulled their wills off the internet, put them together, everything to each other. They had bought property together. They had, you know, commingled their money. They had done this, done that. And lo and behold, one of them passes away. The will specifically says, I mean, a list of like 25 things, my this, my that, my this, my that, my personal property, my this, to the significant other.
Mm-hmm.
Lo and behold, the document has no residuary clause. It doesn't have a catch-all clause, and it never says real estate anywhere.
Oof.
So the 3 or 4 pieces of real estate that was intended and they bought together to go to each other in this committed relationship, the court interpreted that to not have a specific provision with regard to the real estate. So guess where that one half of the real estate went? It went to the brothers of the person
who
died. That's a lawsuit.
Sure is. It's a messy lawsuit.
That's a messy lawsuit where if the folks had just gone and sat down with an attorney
and it's like
had the conversation and drafted an appropriate document, the intent would have been carried out. And unfortunately, you know, the three brothers, they know the intent.
Sure.
They know the intent. They probably didn't like the relationship. You know, that's another conversation.
Yeah.
So they didn't, they said, we're going to keep the property and we're going to fight you over it. So
that makes my stomach turn.
I know it. It's awful. And
for what you said, Wes, earlier in the show, for a couple $100 and a little bit of time sitting in front of, you know, your counsel at Harvell.
What a simple document.
Simple, very easy.
I hereby devise, bequeath my entire estate to whoever.
They're probably in and out of your office in a couple minutes after that.
Yeah.
Yep.
And on their way to lunch or whatever. That's awful.
Yep.
We see a lot of that.
Yeah,
we see a lot of just tragic missed opportunities.
And the solution is get your life in order, get a plan, get a will, talk to your legal counsel, talk to Harvell and Collins, and you can do that by going online to harvellandcollins.com or call the office 252-726-9050. It's that simple, and it should be simple. Thank you, gentlemen. We'll talk next week.